to Firestarter, the UK's first podcast for social enterprises in health. This is podcast number one, and we'll be doing an interview with Chris Dabbs, looking at what is social enterprise, and particularly what are social enterprises in healthcare. Hello, and this week's podcast, we're doing an interview with Chris Dabbs, who's the director of CHAP, Community Health Action Partnership in Salford, and is also the coordinator of NHS Networks for your sins, and I don't know what other projects you're involved in or...
Yep. I also do some work as a freelance futurologist.
Oh right.
Just
that sounds like
busy.
A great job title, freelance futurologist.
Always gets people interested, right. And they always wonder where the crystal ball's going.
We thought we'd do a chat this to start with, which is probably the kind of chat we both have with a lot of people. It's kind of what is social enterprise, particularly kind of in the NHS, and people are going, what is it? How do we become one? And kind of what's your nutshell definition of social enterprise, or what one is?
For me, a social enterprise as an organization is fairly straightforward. It's a business that's trying to change society, create social good.
Okay.
But I think as importantly, social enterprise is as much it's an activity or a state of mind as much as it is an organization. So trying to use some of the techniques of business, but instead of trying to do that in order to just make money for yourself or for shareholders, yeah, is doing it in a way which actually creates a public benefit, which improves your local community, those sorts of things.
Because that's one of the things I find interesting is I think a lot of, and there's a lot of debates about, is something a social enterprise and what's the difference between charity and third sector? And you get people that you think the social bit's there, but there's not a business-like bone in their body, mm-hmm, and the organisations don't operate remotely business-like. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things I find interesting, or the ones I'm tended to gravitate towards, are the ones where you can see the business and the entrepreneurial, the bit that goes, here's an opportunity, you know, let's take this bit forward.
Absolutely. And I think for me there's a distinction between often what's described as social enterprise, which for me often when people talk about that, what they mean is I'm setting up an organization.
Yeah.
As against what I would call social entrepreneurship, which is much more about seeing whatever the gap might be in society and coming up with a new or a different way of addressing that particular issue.
Right.
So I think there are quite a lot of social enterprises which I would see as being quite legitimate, but they're not entrepreneurial.
Yeah.
And then there are individuals.
Almost using tried and like the co-op's a good model. I don't think co-op isn't particularly entrepreneurial.
Yeah. And there's nothing wrong with that, but I think we need to be clear about the difference between, if you like, just replicating something a number of times, just setting up businesses, as against something which is more entrepreneurial, which is largely about an individual,
yeah,
saying there's an issue here that needs doing something about it, and I'm going to go and do something about it, but not for my own, just my own personal profit, doing it because I've got some sort of values that are built into it. And I think there's a great distinction between the two, and what most people, I think, are focusing on is setting up a social enterprise.
And they get very hung up on legal structures and organisational models.
But I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because we need lots of those organisations. But without kidding ourselves that what that is social entrepreneurship.
Mm.
Social entrepreneurship is different. It's about finding new ways of addressing unresolved problems.
I once heard an interesting distinction because I always thought, well, you know, entrepreneurship, setting up businesses, and someone said, well, I'll give you a classic example. He said, running McDonald's. He said, if you run a McDonald's franchise, they will give you a manual that says everything from how long you cook the chips to what the uniform the staff wear. So there is absolutely no innovation whatsoever.
Yeah.
And a McDonald's you get in Salford is the same as in London or Peking or America. And so you can have that kind of, you can run a business, which is fine, use a tried and tested model, or you can have entrepreneurship where you go, oh, here's something weird and here's something new.
Yeah. I mean, I was actually talking to somebody earlier today about the origins of the term.
Right.
And it what I understand, it originally comes from the French theatre in the 18th century.
Oh, right.
And you take the two bits, entre and prendre, and basically it was the person who held the show together.
Right.
That was where the term entrepreneur originally comes from. And essentially that, for me, is what an entrepreneur does. Whether it's social or commercial, they have a particular personality which only reacts in challenging circumstances, and then they tend to gather half a dozen people around them who are not entrepreneurs, but enable the whole show to take place. So they have a set of complementary characteristics. But it's the person who is the spark plug in the middle, who is the one who has the idea, gets it going, and then at some point you probably need to boot out.
Yeah, 3 or 4 years down the line.
I'd say 2.
Well, I think that's interesting. I mean, there's a point. I mean, I think it's eased off a bit now, Patricia Hewitt's gone, but there was a point where there was a big, you know, social enterprise, very sexy in the NHS. And I was talking to a lot of senior managers who were all like, oh, we want to set up a social enterprise. And you'd look at them and you think, well, there aren't exactly many entrepreneurs sat around the table. And I think I find it quite interesting where these people crop up. Because I think they often have quirky career paths, or they end up in unusual places, and they're often kicking against authority, and they're trying new things, and I think you need one of them. If you haven't got one of them at the core of it, it's just not really going to work.
Well, absolutely, and certainly with schemes that I've run in the past, looking for social entrepreneurs in any context, whether it's communities or organisations, generally. You can go around and ask people, what are the issues around here and who makes things happen? And eventually you hear the same name over and over. And usually they'll be seen as different or weird or as a troublemaker. Quite often they have their own little hidey hole where they go off and do things.
Right.
And either they're enabled to do that in some way, or somebody tries to manage them. And then they just lose their whole purpose.
Or they get really dysfunctional.
And I think in large organisations, the best ones I know, where you'll have a chair or a chief executive who will try and spot the 4, 5, 6 weirdo troublemaker type people, and they'll essentially say, "Don't come near production delivery."
Right.
What you're good at is what you're good at, which is coming up with the new ideas, and effectively you are our future. But when you've come up with the good ideas, well, then give it to people who are really good managers, whereas entrepreneurs are rarely very good managers.
Yeah.
And I think one of the things I would say for people who are looking at this type of stuff is probably be clear what your strengths are. Personally, I think management's a lot more difficult than being an entrepreneur.
And people often get forced into those roles, particularly in the early days when there's maybe not much money.
Yeah.
They often end up doing all the finance and the IT and the people management, and you very rapidly work out what you are and aren't good at.
Oh, sure. You know? And that's the key about getting the half dozen people around
you.
Yeah. But I think for the entrepreneur, particularly if you've been inside a big organisation, which often will tell you, you must be a good manager.
Yeah.
Is actually being really clear about what your strengths are, and also what you're not good at, and then saying, right, we're going to focus, I'm going to focus on what I'm good at, and what I'm good at is spotting gaps. I'm good at ideas. I'm good at coming up with new ways of doing things, those sorts of things, and that's what I should be doing. And then being very distinct from those people who are really good managers, who can eventually take the idea when it's formed and then sustain it and make it run for years and years and years, which is a completely different set of skills and techniques. And they're both equally as valid as each other, because I think there is a danger in all the stuff that's been talked about social enterprise that, you know, the entrepreneur is put up as this special person and, you know, who's better than everybody else.
Yeah.
I think there's fewer of them, because you wouldn't want lots of entrepreneurs all over the place, because it'd be chaos. But you want some of them. but you also need a lot more people who are really good at just delivering services to a high quality.
And that's one of the things that irritates me. It's like you were talking about management. There's almost a value judgment to entrepreneurs that it's a good thing. Mm. And saying, as you were saying, yes, they're very good at certain stages. And I don't think you can create an organization from scratch without one, or it's not going to work very well. But they don't become very good maintenance people.
No.
And one of my favorite entrepreneur books is probably The Beer Mat Entrepreneur, partly because it's small and light and it's got cartoons in it. But there's a whole chapter devoted to getting rid of the founders, which talks about that stage where what they liked was the small, funky, small organization. And now they've got 50 people and a director of HR, a director of finance. They start becoming problematic.
Yeah.
You know, like Richard Branson, it's very clear he gets out quite quickly.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, almost all the really good entrepreneurs I've ever seen of any type know when it's time to leave, because actually their skills become less relevant.
Mm.
And I suppose really that, you know, they will also get frustrated, and what they will try and do is completely reinvent the whole organization, and they cause chaos.
Yeah.
Rather than saying, right, I'm here for a certain time because I'll do what I'm good at to help the thing set up, but then what this place needs is somebody who will maintain and develop it, because I've got 55 other ideas that I need to go and set up, and that's actually what I'm good at.
Mm.
And I think it's about distinguishing the two roles, not valuing one more highly than the other, and just saying they're different.
Yeah.
And the problem is a lot of people get pushed down one route or the other, and quite often it's inappropriate.
So what advice would you give then? Someone approached you and said, you know, I've been hearing about social entrepreneurs. Well, because funnily enough, I mean, nurses, particularly the ones I deal with, that's often the first time they've come across the idea, because usually people have trained, worked in the public sector all their life. Mm-hmm. So what advice would you give to someone who says that they're sort of interested in setting up their own enterprise or going it alone?
Oh, I suppose there'd be a number of things. I mean, one is asking people why they want to do it in the first place.
Yeah.
And really testing that out.
Yeah.
Is it just because you want to get away from where you are?
Yeah.
Yes, which is
do you
bad,
just hate your job?
Yeah. Bad reason for doing it. Are you really prepared to take the degree of risk and personal risk that it involves? And actually, what is it you want to do? What's your idea? I tend to like to talk to people in terms of things like dreams, hopes, aspiration. You know, are you prepared really to die for this? Do you really feel it in your gut? Because if you don't, you won't be prepared to really make a real go of this. Because there is a much greater degree of risk in doing this. There's also an awful lot of fun involved as well. But I like to test people out to say, okay, what is it you really want to do? And is what you're describing to me really, really what you want to do?
Or is it something you just think you might fancy dabbling in? Yeah.
Or often I've had work with people who will start to tell me about what other people have effectively said, that would be a good idea. Or somebody will say, I might be able to do this, or I quite fancy that. And I always say, that's nowhere near good enough.
Yeah.
You know, you've really got to get hold of this and say, I'm really energized by this because, you know, about, I don't know, if you want to look at bereavement, I'm really energized by this because of the way that my mother's funeral was dealt with, or because of the way I was brought up in a children's home, I really want to do something with young people who are coming out of care, or whatever it might be. And for an entrepreneur, I think quite often, or almost always, there's something in their background where there's a crack in their history which has made them really passionate about something.
Because they need that for want of a better word, it's almost resilience. And I say to people, look,
absolutely,
you're going to get a lot of knockbacks,
and
you need something that's going to make you dust yourself down, get up, try again and again and again.
Yeah.
If the first time, I was talking to someone a couple of months ago, and they were saying they wanted to set up a social enterprise. They applied for some funding and got turned down. And I was like, yeah, and? And they went, well, we got turned down. And I went, you're going to get turned down a lot more than that.
Yeah.
And that was, for them, that was it. They hit one barrier and then went, well, that didn't work.
That's the real test.
Yeah.
I think there's all sorts of characteristics, but social entrepreneurs, share most of the characteristics that commercial entrepreneurs do. The difference is what they're driven by. And a commercial entrepreneur is largely driven, primarily driven by money.
Yeah.
Social entrepreneur is primarily driven by society. But I suppose that there are some key things. I mean, one which is having that personality. Second one is having a dream that you feel right down, you know, as far down as you could possibly go, that you really, really feel passionately about. And then the other part for me is, I mean, I've heard some people, they talk about ethical fibre.
Right.
There's something in your core being which is about, I'm going to do this ethically, I'm going to do this properly, I've got a really positive reason for doing this that's going to benefit the world.
Yeah.
And really focusing on things that you could describe as your dream.
Because it sounds corny, and some people often say it sounds very Americanized when you talk about dreams and passions and in a cause. But I think there is something. It's almost like it almost goes back to that why question. But it's like, how much are you prepared to go for this? How much effort are you prepared? How much are you going to risk? And that idea of changing the world, it sounds corny, but there is something where I often see people that look at it and go, it shouldn't be like that, or services shouldn't be like that, or the world shouldn't be like that, and I'm going to do something about it, rather than just sit on the sidelines and whinge.
Well, absolutely. And I think there are some people who will say the world shouldn't be like this, and then they don't do anything about it. There's other people who are activists but never identify what the problem is, or they just like to be active.
They just love demos.
Yeah, and the entrepreneurs do both. And they say, there's something wrong here that needs something doing about it, and this is what I'm going to do. But they have to be highly motivated to go through all the problems and the times when there's risks and when you might lose all your income and all those sorts of things. So it's not like having a nice salary that at the end of every month. And say, all right, that's fine, and I know I'm going to be paid for year by year by year. There are times when it comes and you think, I don't know if there's going to be any money in 2 months' time. And if I'm employing people, maybe I'll have to get rid of them all. And am I prepared to do that and take the risk for the benefit of this wider dream? And I suppose one of the things that I like to focus on, I have the thing I call my Mrs. Buggins test,
right,
which is if I'm trying to do anything, is this going to benefit Mrs. Buggins down the road?
And Mrs. Buggins is?
She's just my fictional local person. And for me, she's a lady, early 70s, widowed, dicky hip, bit depressed, lives on her own. Whatever I'm doing has got to make sense to her, and it's got to change her life.
Right.
It doesn't matter how good the quality of the service is or any of those other bits. If it doesn't change her life, this is not changing the world. This has not changed the society. And I think people have got to have some sort of focus or measure like that. I mean, it could be anything, but saying, what is it I'm trying to change?
Yeah.
How am I going to change it? And how will I know when I've changed it? And if you can focus on those sorts of things, then you can really get to the kernel of what your particular dream or your aspiration is. And it can, yes, some of the words can sound a bit woolly, but unless you've got something that's as deeply emotional as ingrained as that, you will not see it through to the end. You will give up halfway through.
And it's one of the funny things, and often people get very fixated on things like legal structures and organisational structures, and people get into definitions on what is and what isn't. And I always say to them, you can tell when you're in a group of social entrepreneurs, and it's a different group. And it's like, if people have been to the Voice conferences at Social Enterprise, probably about half the people there are support organisations, sort of accountants and lawyers and business development people and the rest of it, and half social, and you can spot them. You don't need to be around people in a bar that long, and you get a feel. And I think it is something that, you're right, they have a lot of the characteristics of sort of business entrepreneurs, but they're driven by very different things.
Absolutely.
So status and money are not usually there.
I mean, I saw a description recently of the FTSE Social Enterprise Conference, or Social Enterprise event in Yorkshire, which is very much for practitioners, not for the support organisations. And that sort of different approach, different feel was being described. And I think there are at least two key characteristics, one of which is somebody who's genuinely an entrepreneur, who's got this dream, just can't stop talking about it. Doesn't matter what you try and get them to do, they will keep talking about whatever it is that they're interested in, almost the exclusion of everything else.
They can bore their friends and family rich.
But I think one of the differences possibly with social entrepreneurs compared to other entrepreneurs is they will swap and share ideas and thoughts like there's no tomorrow, and there's no great secrecy, or this is my idea and nobody else can have it. If anything, they'll talk more about it and say, I've got this idea, what do you think? And, oh, did you know that there's somebody down the road who's interested in what you do, or whatever? So there's also great sort of camaraderie amongst social entrepreneurs, which possibly doesn't exist amongst commercial entrepreneurs as much.
Yeah, ideas about things like commercial confidentiality just seem somewhat bizarre. And people always taking the mick out of me because I usually say everything I do is Creative Commons, because I discovered Creative Commons a year ago and just love the idea of going, if you're not going to make any money on it, feel free to pass it around, and if you're going to make any money, give us a ring. I just think it's much better than, say, copyright, that goes, you know, you cannot reproduce this or share
it. There's a sort of parallel with, you know, some of the biggest ideas. You take somebody like Tim Berners-Lee, you know, inventor of the World Wide Web, who in 1989 just decided, I'm not going to copyright or patent this idea, because this should belong to everybody. He's, you know, he's still done right out of it, but it also means that his idea has had a much, much bigger impact on the world than it would have done had he tried to commercialize it. And those types of ideas, where you can get together with other like-minded people who, you know, are sparking off, because that's where you get the even better ideas, because you'll think, you know, an idea from a totally different field will then spark you off in your particular field, and you'll come up with something new, and that's where the excitement comes from. And it's, you know, when you get that feel of, wow, this is such a great idea, I've got to go and make this happen, I've got to tell other people about it, and that's really the sort of payoff of getting that excitement. And if it comes to fruition, when you can see the beneficiaries at the end of all of it, once the organisation's set up and you can see the difference it's making to people's lives. And for me, that's worth all the money all the money in the world.
Well, and in fact, even going on to, you know, the happiness stuff, which I know we could go on for ages, and the Martin Seligman, but there is this thing that says, actually, having lots more money, you know, when you look at business entrepreneurs, and yes, they're often driven by money, but there then comes a point where a lot of them turn into philanthropists because they go, actually, what I want to do is make the world a better place. Mm. And having the biggest yacht or the biggest collection of cars doesn't really do it for me, in a way that people that go, do you know what, I've changed this community. This community is different because of what I did. It's just so much more rewarding.
I mean, I think for most, there's a limit to, you know, how much money you can really make use of. I think for entrepreneurs, for commercial entrepreneurs, often money just becomes a measure. The money itself doesn't become that important. And it's much more, for any sort of entrepreneur, it's the excitement of doing new things, creating new things, and those sorts of things. And really the only difference for a social entrepreneur is you're getting that excitement out of it, but also trying to make the world or your community a better place. And that's the added value of being a social entrepreneur rather than just a commercial one.
Okay, brilliant. Well, thanks, Chris. And actually, we should give a quick plus for NHS Networks while we're here, which is a fantastic network for people who are interested in social enterprises. Yeah. And they can find it at...
The website is worldwideweb.networks.nhs.uk/social-enterprise.
Right.
It's free to join. We've got a network of nearly getting on for 1,000 people now across the country who are interested in social enterprise in health and care. And there's lots of opportunities available and plenty of information on the website.
Brilliant.
All right. Cheers, Chris.
Well, thank you for listening. This was Firestarter, the UK's first podcast for social enterprises in health. And you can find more on our website at entrepreneurses.net. That's entrepreneurses.net. My name's been Dave Dawes, and the music's Fire Dance by DJ Booley through a Creative Commons license, which you can find out more on the website. Hope to see you next week. Bye.